This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's son. You better learn it fast, you better learn it young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel. The title of this installment is The Nature of Jewish Power, Part 3. I spoke the last time about the main topic. I started to introduce the topic that I want to talk about here, and I want to go back and review just a little bit of what I was talking about in the bulk of which in the previous installment. And this is about how Jews view themselves and this duality of their view. And I don't think I made the point strongly enough that Jews of all types have this knowledge of themselves as Jews. It is important to them that they're Jews, and as part of the Jewish community, they have an understanding of what it means to be a Jew and an identity as a Jew. And this is like they treat it as if it's some sort of a secret, as if it's a dark secret. And at the same time, they will discuss it openly. It's not like it literally is a secret. It's what it is they talk about it privately amongst themselves. And occasionally make references to it, speak sort of in code, send little signals to each other, consciously or not, that they can pick up, that they recognize and pick up and see each other as Jews, even when other people don't. And of course, if they're called on it, then they get very defensive about it, and then that's when they act as if it's this dark secret, as if there's some sort of conspiracy going on. And there is, in fact, a conspiracy going on. As I said the last time, the most obvious aspect of that conspiracy is this drive to promote tolerance and combat hate, combat anti-Semitism. Jews, while there's denial of Jewish power, Jews themselves aren't the main example of the denial of Jewish power. In fact, I can think in the examples that I've run across in the last few years, Jews don't really deny that Jews have power. Jews, the kind of Jews that I'm thinking of, the ones who actively fight to defend Jewish power, seem to revel in it, actually. And they mock and they sneer at the opposition, at the anti-Semites, because they are confident that Jews have power, that there is such a thing as Jewish power. I saw that especially during the Chuck Hagel incident that I have referred to several times now. Jews are also very confident in their techniques of how they deal with opposition, by going directly to pathologizing it as some sort of mental illness and demonizing it as if their opposition is literally inhuman, virus, diseased, and so can be fought by any means necessary. There are no moral reasons to hold back or to treat anti-Semites as some sort of equal, are on equal footing. It's a no-holds-barred attitude. The nature of Jewish identity is secretive and cryptic, and many Jews never reveal themselves as Jews. And occasionally one does, and people are surprised by it. It's analogous to homosexuals. And in many ways, homosexuals and Jews are similar. The identity is similar, at least the ones that hide. And they're the ones that are flamboyant and out in the open, and there are probably many more that disguise who they are, that maybe their close friends know, but most of the people that they encounter in their day-to-day dealings don't. But as I mentioned the last time, and what I want to really talk about this time, is the nature of Jewish power as it comes to the dishonesty and the fear of the whites that either collaborate with it or are aware of it and go along with it, or at least don't oppose it. And that's why I was beginning to talk about Joe Sobrun and John Derbyshire. And both of these men came from the so-called conservative side of the political spectrum. Derbyshire, when he was talking about the Jews in the same article here, I'm going to quote some more here from the article, "Be Nice or We'll Crush You." He writes, "The place of Jews in modern American conservatism is a deep and fascinating story with, of course, the conversion of the neocons at its center. You have to bear in mind the overwhelming dominance of Jews in every kind of leftist movement in the U.S. until about 30 years ago." So this is John Derbyshire now telling us that the leftist movement in the U.S. was basically dominated by Jews. And so the conservatives were the other side, the what opposition there was to Jews. And he's leaving out, of course, the people who didn't identify as either liberal or conservative, the people who had already been marginalized and excluded from the polite conversation that Jews permitted to occur, people like George Lincoln Rockwell, for example. Derbyshire goes on and writes, "In any case, it was a great achievement and a great boost for American conservatism to have peeled off a platoon of articulate, energetic, intellectual heavyweights from the great socialistic mass of American Jewry." And here he's recognizing that the great bulk of Jews are his enemies, really, liberals, these at least political, intellectual enemies. And he foolishly, and I don't know how much he sincerely believes this and how much he's just trying to pass this off as if he believes it to the Jews that he's talking to, that he's writing to here, but he passes it off as if he celebrates it. He's being basically a liberal here, celebrating diversity. Wow, we got some Jews on our side, finally. "Generally speaking, and I certainly include myself here, American conservatism is proud of its Jews and glad to have them on board. Not that there aren't some frictions, particularly on mass immigration, the mere contemplation of which just seems to make Jews swoon with ecstasy." What really makes me angry about this particular point that he makes is that he's making it clear here that he's aware of Jewish power and he's aware of its impact on immigration. Now, I think that this was written back in 2004 or so. I'm sorry I didn't get the date beforehand. But it's I don't know, 8 to 10 years ago that he wrote this. And it's possible that he's changed his mind since. I don't know. I don't think so. In fact, I got into this because I was reacting to Derbyshire just recently describing what's going on as suicide. Not as genocide, in which there are two parties, a party that's doing the genociding and a party that's being genocided. But he described what's happening as suicide, and he was specifically talking about immigration, which is becoming more and more obvious to even ordinary folk, even the people who aren't elite and aren't rubbing elbows with Jews and aren't aware of Jews. They are aware that this immigration thing is going to be the end of the country. It's going to be the end of America as most white people know it and love it. And Derbyshire was describing it, and he's a pundit. He's well aware. And that was the point of my my blog post on this, and to bring up this old article that he had written, is he's well aware of Jewish power. He's well aware that they don't identify as white. And this is another aspect of the duality of Jewish identity. Jews identify strongly as Jews. They pass themselves as white because it helps them to sell their morality and their message and their tolerance as peers, but here's where the double thing comes in, is they're white like us, but they're special because they're Jews, and so they have this moral authority to tell us how to think. But amongst the people like Derbyshire and maybe even Joe Sobrun to a certain extent, amongst conservatives, they're afraid to challenge Jews on that point. And that is really that goes back hundreds of years, really, to Jewish emancipation in Europe, when Jews were really the only diversity, the only minority amongst the European populations. They still got their way. They still got equal treatment under the law, equal political power, or at least the right to vote, the right to be treated as an equal citizen in European societies, starting 200 years ago, roundabouts. The idea that Jews are white is, in European terms, it's the idea that Jews are German, the idea that Jews are French, the idea that Jews are British, or English even. It's not that Americans are not uniquely stupid in accepting Jews as white. White is how we Americans identified our nationality up until Jewish immigrants started flooding into the country and ultimately took control of the country. But it happened even in European countries, where it's mind-boggling to try and understand how could it happen? How could Germans look at these people who call themselves Jews, who obviously identified as Jews, but then also at the same time tried to identify as German, spoke German, tried to put on the trappings and pass as Germans, but right next door were French Jews, and right next door were Italian Jews, and Danish Jews, and Polish Jews, and surely the people at that time must have seen that these Jews were Jews, and yet they still, Jews had the power to overcome this obvious contradiction, this obvious doublethink, and be treated as equal citizens anyway, as equal to the native peoples of all of those European countries. And so it's not really much of a surprise that it also happened in America. And you would think, though, with the hindsight, people like Derbyshire, rather than welcoming Jews, would have realized that it was a bad thing to welcome for Jews to infiltrate into the conservative side of politics. Joe Sobrun did, and he gave a speech in 2002 that was titled "For Fear of the Jews." And I want to quote a long section here, a couple paragraphs, because it's in direct contrast to Derbyshire's attitude. In my 30 years in journalism, nothing has amazed me more than the prevalent fear in the profession of offending Jews, especially Zionist Jews. Now, Derbyshire is aware of this aspect and actually quoted Sobrun on this point. The fear of the label anti-Semitic is a fear of the power that is believed to lie behind it, Jewish power. Yet this is still pretty much unmentionable in journalism. It's rather as if sports writers covering pro basketball were prohibited from mentioning that the Los Angeles Lakers were in first place. there has been a qualitative change that is downright eerie in American conservatism generally. The, quote, fear of the Jews, unquote, to use the phrase so often repeated in the Gospel according to John, seems to have wrought a reorientation of the tone, the very principles of today's conservatism. The hearty skepticism, critical intelligence, and healthy irony of men like James Burnham, Wilmore Kendall, and the young Buckley have given way to the uncritical philo-Semitism of George Will, Cal Thomas, Rush Limbaugh, and of course the later Buckley, men who will go to any lengths, even absurd and dishonorable lengths, to avoid the terrorizing label anti-Semite. And that's the route that Derbyshire has chosen for himself. Like Sebrun, he's had his run-ins with Jews, and he understands very well the power that Jews have, but Derbyshire kowtows to it rather than speaking plainly about it and in opposition to it, as Sebrun did. It was once considered anti-Semitic, and he writes quotes around anti-Semitic as I do, to impute dual loyalty, quotes around that as well, to Jews. That is, to assert that most American Jews divide their loyalty between the United States and Israel. This is now passé. Today, most politicians assume, as a matter of course, that Israel commands the primary loyalty of Jewish voters. Are they accused of anti-Semitism for doing so? Does this assumption cost them Jewish votes? Not at all. Dual loyalty, nothing. Dual loyalty would be an improvement. So Sebrun here is explaining that behind what seems like dual loyalty or a double standard is really the single principle. Is it good for the Jews their single loyalty to being Jews? That it's not even a question anymore that they have to answer, or a charge that they have to answer. Now, at the danger of getting into something that's more of a Jewish specialty, psychoanalysis, I have to mention here a psychological syndrome called known as the Stockholm syndrome, because I see this aspect in the people like Derbyshire, these conservatives who are convinced that Jews are white, or at least in the sense of political terms of being allies, potential allies and friends. He wants them desperately, and not just he, but this afflicts many people. And whether it's out of fear or love of the Jews, that they sincerely are afraid of them and afraid to challenge Jewish power because they're aware of it, or they're aware of Jewish power and they like it. They think of themselves, maybe they're partly Jewish, maybe they're married to somebody who's Jewish, maybe somebody in their family is, or maybe they just like Jews because they like the winning team and they want to be on the winning team, that they go along with it. And I see aspects of the Stockholm syndrome in that. And I know that it's named after a bank robbery that occurred and the hostages that were taken that came to sympathize with their captors. And that's usually how it's understood. But I think it's not much of a stretch to see that as fitting these conservatives whose movement has been hijacked by the Jews and who now find themselves in the back seat with the Jews in control. And they try to come to some accommodation. They try to bargain, even if it's mostly only in their own mind, how to deal with this psychologically, this loss of power, this being controlled, being at the mercy of another group that's hostile, that's willing to harm you if you challenge them. And so I looked up a little bit of Stockholm syndrome to find out what the general terms are, what the symptoms are, for instance. First of all, it's related to what they call battered person syndrome, or, you know, before political correctness, that would have been called battered wife syndrome. The case where a wife, even though she's beaten by her husband, still loves him and still even defends him and stays with him despite that those beatings. That's a related syndrome, related to Stockholm syndrome psychologically. One of the lists of symptoms of Stockholm syndrome that I found said that there were three traits that have to be present. And see for yourself if you think these fit. I think they do, the conservatives who think of Jews as their allies. A severely uneven power relationship in which the captor dictates what the prisoner can and cannot do. The threat, that's point one. Point two, the threat of death or physical injury to the prisoner at the hands of the captor. And point three, symptom three, a self-preservation instinct on the part of the prisoner. And this third one is interesting because it directly contradicts what Derbyshire's argument about suicide was. And I've made the point many times that calling it suicide is patently false. People, even the people who are collaborating with the Jews, are traitors. They're not trying to kill themselves. They're doing what they think is in their best interests as individuals or as a narrow family that they think they're going to join the winning team. Or at least, like say in Derbyshire's case, that even though he knows he's on the losing side, the conservative side, that at least he'll just continue to be able to do his job and he'll be able to continue to write about what he's interested in writing about just out of principle. If he says the right things and doesn't fuck with the Jews, that he'll be okay. Personally, I think that's naive, but that seems to be what his decision is. To go along to get along, at least to a certain extent. Included in these traits, these symptoms, are the prisoner's belief, correct or incorrect, it doesn't matter, that he or she cannot escape, which means that survival must occur within the rules set by the all-powerful captor, and the prisoner's isolation from people not being held by the captors, which prohibits any outside view of the captors from infringing on the psychological processes that lead to Stockholm syndrome. So I see lots of parallels here with how the conservatives act and the situation. The Jews that have infiltrated and control how conservatives do conservatism now, they dictate what the non-Jews that want to be part of this mainstream conservative can and cannot do, can and cannot say. Otherwise, you're out, fired or otherwise punished. The threat of death or physical injury isn't there so much as it is professional death, that your career will be over if you cross the Jews who have the power to end your career. And this self-preservation instinct on the part of the prisoner, they, like Derbyshire, makes it pretty clear that he's trying to survive. Now, I'd like to contrast here as well, and I brought it up when I mentioned Joe Biden's praising of Jewish power when I wrote a blog post about it. The first thing that came to my mind, and the first thing I mentioned in my blog post, was the tapes of Richard Nixon, President Nixon, back in 1972, was having a private conversation in the White House with Billy Graham, the Christian leader. And they were talking about Jewish power. And I contrasted that with Joe Biden. Joe Biden talked about it openly here decades later, but only to praise it. Whereas when Nixon and Graham were talking about it, they were talking about it in darker terms. They saw it as a threat. And yet they could only speak about it in private. They didn't feel that the President of the United States and the most powerful Christian leader in the United States, even together, didn't feel that they had enough power to challenge Jewish power. That's how powerful, in their estimation, Jews were, even in 1972. So it's hard to find, actually, a transcript, a full transcript or recording of this recording that came available in 2002 it first came to light. There were previous rumors of it. One of Nixon's aides wrote published a book in 94 where he mentioned it, but I don't think quoted it at length. When the tapes finally came out, Billy Graham couldn't deny it any longer. He had tried. And so instead he claimed he just couldn't remember what he had said. But what he said was, and this is the best, the longest, most complete segment that I was able to find, "They're the ones putting out the pornographic stuff," Mr. Graham said on the tape after agreeing with Mr. Nixon that left-wing Jews dominate the news media. "The Jewish, quote, stranglehold has got to be broken or the country's going down the drain," he continued, suggesting that if Mr. Nixon were reelected, then we might be able to do something. Finally, Mr. Graham said that Jews did not know his true feelings about them. "I go and I keep friends with Mr. Rosenthal at the New York Times and people of that sort," you know, he told Mr. Nixon. Not all the Jews, but a lot of the Jews are great friends of mine. They swarm around me and are friendly to me because they know that I'm friendly with Israel, but they don't know how I really feel about what they are doing to this country. And I have, this is the, probably the most interesting thing, and I had never seen this one before, "and I have no power," Graham complains, "no way to handle them, but I would stand up if under proper circumstances." And the interesting thing about this is must be what's going through the heads of lots of these conservatives who pretend Jews are white, Jews are conservative, Jews are on our side, Jews can be our allies. Maybe not all of them, but the bad ones are those liberal Jews over there. But they're liberals, and there's lots of white liberals, too, that are bad. And so it's not really about the Jews. It's not about Jewish power. Well, it is about Jewish power. That's the reality is. And these people are in denial of one form or another, especially on the right side, the conservatives, who identify as conservatives. And here we see how their thinking goes. Graham, in private, was sharing his real thoughts here. He never expected that this would have been publicized or made public. He probably was unaware he was being recorded, although Nixon knew. Nixon was happy to hear somebody else say this. And one of the amazing things about this exchange was that Nixon and Graham had known each other since the 50s. That's when they first met. And yet here it was 20-odd years later, and they're only now coming to realize that they each are aware of Jewish power and opposed to it, at least in spirit, but that they both feel, they're both commiserating, that they don't really feel powerful enough to actually do anything about it. Billy Graham saying, I have no power. If Billy Graham doesn't have any power, then who does in America? What makes me think I can stand up and talk about it? I don't know. That's one of those aspects that makes me think that there's something to that stupid, crazy, evil thing. As I said, Jews have power. I don't know how many times I can say it. There is a worldwide Jewish conspiracy. Jewish power is based in part on ignorance. The masses don't know that Jews have power. They don't understand who Jews are or what they're doing. And for the people who are in power, the Nixons, the Grahams, the Derbyshires, well, Derbyshire doesn't really have power, but Sobran and Derbyshire are aware of it. It's the power, Jewish power is based on fear and intimidation of those people. It's ignorance that's deliberately cultivated, and it's fear that's deliberately cultivated.